And sir, you may begin.
Thank you very much, Lynn, and thanks everybody for getting on the call this morning. Today we'll be highlighting a new CAP report, Closing the Healthcare Workforce Gap. Before we begin, I just want to give some contact information for myself here at the Center for American Progress. In case there are any follow-up questions, you are welcome to email me. My name's John Neuroer. You can call 202-481-8182, or you can email JN, as in Nancy, EUROHR at AmericanProgress.org. Today on the call, we are very excited to have Senator Jeff Bingaman. We really appreciate him taking time out of his very busy schedule to join us. We also have Ellen Marie Whalen, who's the Associate Director of Health Policy here at CAB. We have Fitzhugh Mullen, who is Murdoch Head Professor of Medicine and Health Policy at the George Washington University. We also have Dan Dirksen, who is the Professor of Family and Community Medicine at the University of New Mexico School of Medicine. We will have some quick introductory remarks, and then we'll have plenty of time for questions at the end. So it's our pleasure to turn the floor over first to Senator Bingaman. Senator?
Thank you, John. Let me just try to put this in perspective, at least as I see it. This health care bill, if we're able to enact it, will expand coverage to another 30 million or so Americans. And obviously, that will put substantial new requirements on the healthcare workforce. We already have shortages in the healthcare workforce in many parts of the country. In New Mexico, we see it all the time. And I'm sure a lot of other parts of the country also suffer with that. And the addition of these individuals to coverage is going to make that substantially worse. So in parallel with the expansion of coverage, the other side of that coin has to be doing better by the healthcare workforce. We've done some things, particularly in the Senate version of this bill, that we think are very important to accomplish that. The first and foremost thing is the establishment of a permanent National Health Workforce Commission. We think it's crucial that this remain in the final legislation. I've heard that there's some question as to whether it would remain in the final legislation, but this is not a one-shot deal. We need an independent organization, a broad, well-informed independent organization that can make recommendations on an annual basis going forward, and we think this commission fits that bill. There are a lot of other very good recommendations in this report, and I congratulate Dan Dirksen and all the others who have been involved in this development of this report. But I think my main purpose is just to highlight the issue of workforce development and the importance of keeping this commission in the final bill. So let me stop with that.
Thank you so much, Senator. Dan, you want to pick up from there?
Sure. My name is Dan Dirksen, and I'm a family physician at the University of New Mexico and professor of family and community medicine. And as Senator Bingaman mentioned, if 30 more, million more are covered through a version of this health reform package, there will be an increased demand, some estimate as high as 25% more demand on the current health workforce. So it's very important that we examine carefully the current federal funding of health professions education, and that right now occurs in two large general categories. The first and by far the largest is the $12 billion currently spent and paid to teaching hospitals through Medicare and Medicaid add-on payments. And much of that has an end product then of producing subspecialty physicians who practice in adequately served urban and metropolitan areas, and there needs to be a better balance of kind of where physicians go into practice after they graduate, especially in the high-need specialties such as primary care and general surgery. The second and much smaller federal support for health professions is through the Health Resources and Services Administration, or HRSA, which supports the health workforce in primary care, nursing, and dental. That amount is $530 million, and the way I kind of look at it is that if you think about this, for every federal dollar we spend on HRSA's workforce programs in primary care, nursing, and dental, we're spending 24 federal dollars to train physicians in highly specialized teaching hospitals in metropolitan areas. So I think of it as the federal funding of teaching hospitals is really the bulldozer to the HRSA rake in reshaping the health workforce landscape. Having, as Senator Bingaman mentioned, the National Health Workforce Commission would help us reexamine how we're spending federal dollars related to our nation's health workforce and make that investment more transparent, accountable, and much more aligned with where our needs are. There's also provisions around loans and scholarships to entice individuals to pursue health professions, but we need those very targeted to community-based education, to underserved in rural areas, and high-need specialties such as primary care and nursing. I think if we make those types of investments, as we've recommended in our policy brief, we'll better serve the unmet needs of health needs in our communities. So with that, I think I'll close my statement.
Thanks so much, Dan. Ellen Marie?
Thanks. So I'm Ellen Marie Whalen. I'm the Associate Director of Health Policy here at the Center for American Progress, and I'm also a primary care nurse practitioner. The way that our report's laid out, we talk about 9 different specific recommendations that should happen in any kind of health reform that's moving through Congress, and we divide them into 3 general areas. The first is a better realignment of federal spending and how the federal spending is improving the healthcare workforce. And as Senator Bingaman mentioned, probably the most important recommendation there is we need a body at the higher level to really take a long, big look at the federal workforce that we have now in the nation. And we have suggested the development of a commission that would do that, look at the shortages, look at where we need to put more dollars in and make those recommendations to both Congress and to the federal agencies. The second federal investment is a better payment structure for primary care providers. And that's important for a couple reasons. First of all, because the way the health reform bill is moving, we're looking to move people out of hospitals into primary care and doing a better job managing their care in the outpatient setting. So we want to make sure that those providers out there in the areas where they're providing primary care are better reimbursed. And there's a 5 or 10% bonus payment that we are recommending for primary care providers. In addition, we are recommending that in the Medicaid program, we actually increase the primary care payments to be equal to that of the Medicare program. In terms of the second general area is supporting individuals who choose to work in these underserved areas. And the first is a very healthy investment in the National Health Service Corps, which is a program that's been around since 1972 that provides scholarships and loan repayment for healthcare workers who choose to work in underserved areas like rural areas and inner city. The second is grants for necessary professions, and we certainly know that there's a huge nursing workforce. It's estimated that last year we had to turn away 50,000 qualified applicants to nursing programs because we didn't have enough faculty, nursing faculty, to train them. So there's money in there to get more nursing faculty. And last is grants to increase the diversity of the workforce. And the third general area is how we train health professionals. And the biggest recommendation we're making is to make sure that there's incentives in place to train professionals in the community where the vast majority of health care is delivered and not so much in hospitals, since we're looking to have a better coordinated care service delivery in the outpatient setting. So the 3 general areas, better realignment of federal dollars, supporting individuals who choose to work in underserved areas, and then changing how our health professionals are trained. And with that, I'll turn it over to Fitzhugh Mullen.
Hi, I'm Fitzhugh Mullen. I'm a professor of public health and pediatrics at George Washington University. And I got my start in medicine as a National Health Service Corps doctor in New Mexico back a number of years. So I'm very appreciative as a former New Mexican of the leadership Senator Bingaman has exerted in the workforce area. And just turning to that, we invest a lot in medicine and in health sciences, but the workforce is often an afterthought. And clearly the people who lay on hands, the people who do the work, the workforce, are central to what, as individuals, we get and as a population, we get from healthcare. So the attention that this bill has brought and that this report have brought to the workforce is terribly important. And I'm strongly a supporter of the issues, the the instruments that are in this bill, and particularly to highlight the teaching health centers that Ellen Marie just mentioned. Much of our approach to training of particularly doctors, but nurses and others, is hospital-based. That's where traditionally we've trained people, and it's efficient. There's a lot of disease, a lot of problems that you can learn on very quickly. But that's not where most healthcare takes place. So that efforts to move training into an area where providers will be educated in a way that they are most facile with, clinically, linguistically, culturally, with the patients and the illnesses as they occur is terribly important. So efforts in this bill to move training into teaching health centers in the community is really revolutionary and terribly important for the system, and will be a major asset as we move forward. So the area the attention is getting is important. Support for it is critical, and having the bill go through with these provisions in it will make a huge difference for the future of healthcare in the United States. With that, I'll turn it back to John, the moderator.
Thanks very much. Thanks to all our speakers. I think at this point, Lynn, we'll turn it over to you for Q&A.
If you would like to ask an audio question, press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Again, that's star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad for any audio questions. Again, for audio questions, press star, then the number 1. And there are no audio questions at this time.
Well, thank you all very much for getting on today. Senator Bingaman, especially with your busy schedule, we appreciate you getting on. Ellen Marie, do you want to wrap up quickly?
I think, thanks. I think one of the things we just wanted to reiterate is the importance of this issue. It's been so much focus on all the controversy that's happening in these bills that are moving through Congress, and we just wanted to highlight some of the really good things that are in both the House and Senate bills. Some of them are not quite the same yet, and they're still working on those details. We wanted to thank Senator Bingaman again. He has been a champion of moving these health workforce provisions. He saw the writing on the wall way before health care reform that this was important to be investing in this now and looking ahead to where our workforce will need to be in the not-so-distant future.
So, again, thank you all for getting on. I know Senator Bingaman had to jump off because, obviously, he's very busy. But we did record the call. If anybody wants an MP3 copy or has any follow-up questions, please shoot me an email, jneurohr@americanprogress.org. Thank you all very much once again.
Thank you.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.